Hello and welcome to Open Mind UFO Radio. I almost forgot the name of my own radio show. That's how frazzled I am. This is your host, Alejandro Rojas, and I am here with my good friend, Martin the Goofball Willis.
Well, I don't know if people realize this, but I never know what you're going to say. Mm-hmm. But goofball is one I can handle. Yeah,
good.
That's me.
Because you are a goofball. You're a goofball like I am, and people may not, that probably. Well, I'm sure that comes across. But it's fun being a goofball.
Yeah, you know, I mean, don't take life too seriously.
Yeah. Even though maybe we have been.
I think we have been off record. Yeah.
Yeah. So we gotta chill, which is hard to do. But we'll
lighten
up,
Francis.
Yeah. Speaking of not lightening up, boy, oh boy, our guest today is Grant Cameron, and we had a spirited discussion, but it was fun. I mean, Grant's good about it. Grant and I go back many, many years, if not decades, and especially, you know, maybe about mid-relationship, our views started to go different directions, but we still stay in contact. And we both have just this intense interest in politics and government and UFOs. And so that's what we kind of battle about in this interview. And we're not, I think, you know, we both have different points of view, but that's what's fun. You know, we get really excited to express what's going on and what we feel, and so it's a lot of fun. And you know what, Grant always makes me think. He makes some great points, and he's just a very knowledgeable person. When he connects the dots, it's at least not uneducated. He's very read on these topics. So yeah, a lot of fun. This is a really fun interview, really high energy, where we're just going back and forth.
Yeah, I like Grant. He's a good guy, and you said high energy. He can really burn up the tape, as they say. He talks a lot, and he's well spoken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a lot of fun. And in fact, when we talked, he was in Laughlin to do a talk out there, and it was right before his talk that we talked. So. I wonder if that influenced his lecture out there. But So that's who we've got. That's who we will be talking to later on. But before we get to that, of course, we always talk to good old Martin Willis about UFO news. And so what you got for him, my buddy?
Well, this one is close to your home out there Tucson, Arizona.
Yeah.
And it's a disc UFO reported hovering 50 feet over a Tucson street. And this happened back in September 26 of this year, 2016. It was about 10:30 p.m. And it was a mother and son watching a disc-shaped object about 50 feet off the ground. And this is was reported to MUFON. And the story was posted by Roger Marsh, I want to say, of course, because he's always writing great posts on your website. And so the woman's husband filed the report with MUFON, and the man emphasized in the report that his wife and son are devout Catholics and very trustful people. I'm not really sure. And I'll keep my comments to myself on that one. But prior to his son entering the vehicle, they happened to glance up, and they saw an altitude of a craft. I'm not sure exactly what he means by that. He noticed the object was just there hovering. Mm-hmm. And they pondered for a moment, and he told his mother what he was seeing. And the young man's mother also looked in the same direction, and they departed Walmart in the direction of Valencia and Old Vail Road. Of course, I don't know where any of these are. You may, I don't know. But the object mm-hmm. suddenly appeared on the northwest side of the intersection above a gas station. Unfortunately, there's no pictures of this, mm-hmm. But it was a very large object, according to them. And it lowered toward the front of them about 40 feet from the vehicle. And the Jeep remained running, but with no electrical fluctuations or no other issues. It's interesting that they noted that because, you know, there are cases that I think are very interesting where there's actually issues with the car's electrical system.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the object inverted itself at a 45-degree angle and then shot to the right, which is right by an RV business. Hmm. And interesting sighting.
Yeah. Yeah,
again,
kind of
no
weird.
No photos or anything, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But that's the way it goes on some of these. I mean, I understand when someone doesn't even think to take a picture because I've been there and it's, yeah. You know, you're just like, you're trying to understand what you're seeing. Picture's yep. kind of the last thing you think of a lot of times.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, and I have a couple to talk about too. These are both also from Roger. These also don't have photos, but they do have drawings from the witness. And these are interesting because they're kind of, again, as we talk about so much, you just talked about a disc hovering over the road. Occasionally you get those reports. It seems more often triangles are hovering mm-hmm. Lately, and these are both those sort of sightings. The first one being on August 8th, 2014. So this is an older one, just recently submitted. This was at 7:30 a.m., and this guy got out to head to work, and he saw a shadow on the roadway about a quarter mile ahead. How cool is that? I mean, you don't hear about these that often. He looked up, and he saw this chevron-shaped craft hovering just east of the highway at about 250 to 300 feet, he estimates. He says it appeared to be about the size of an F-111 aardvark. Have you ever heard of an aardvark?
No, I didn't know there was such a thing. I know what an F-111 is, but not an aardvark.
Yeah, so this is in Arkansas, Bella Vista, so they call the F-111s aardvarks out there, I guess. Was not aware. But yeah, pretty interesting. He said he got closer and then it accelerated quickly and flew off to the south. Within a few seconds, it was gone. He says he was an Air Force security policeman and he's worked around nuclear weapons and so, you know, he's been in the government. He was looking through polarized glasses that morning, which, you know, helped keep the glare out of his eyes so he could see the object well, he felt. But that's a really strange one. And he drew a picture of the shadow and everything. So pretty cool story. He also felt, and he draws this in his picture, that the shadow was not where it should have been. The shadow seemed to be directly below the craft, but the sun was, of course, on the horizon, so the shadow shouldn't have been directly above. So he felt that was odd.
That is odd, mm-hmm. and it just adds to so many mysteries you always hear about some of these sightings.
Mm-hmm. So, and then this other one is from Florida, from Bradenton, and this one had two witnesses. This was this year. This was October 22nd, so not very long ago. Two witnesses, but they both saw something a little bit different. This was 8 p.m. And the witness said he saw a white triangle that was well defined with a red globe on the base. So this witness drew a picture, and the picture is, he kind of described it as triangular shape, but almost like two long white fluorescent bulbs configured so in kind of a V shape, and then at the bottom of that was a red light at its base. He felt was kind of like a red orb, so that's why he felt that the object looked triangular in shape. And he had 8x power binoculars he was looking through on that one. Now the second witness saw something different. The second witness thought it looked like two bright orbs that were connected kind of by these fuzzy edges. So this witness said it was more like a rectangular kind of shape. So, but also said that even though they were white, it did look like it had some maybe red and blue lights on it. So their accounts were a little different. But the investigator in this case, I don't think they said, you know, their final conclusions yet, but they said that at least they had checked and there were no satellites or anything in the area. So so another strange one.
Yeah, now does so an investigator, I know that you have some background in this. Do they interview the people separately?
Well, they should. You do your best to do that.
Yeah.
To interview them completely separately so they don't taint each other's testimony. I don't have access to the report, so we don't have a whole lot. And I don't think they said they were able to get that. They don't say explicitly here that they did interview them separately. But if you can, you should try to do that. Often parents with kids, it's a little more difficult to do that. But
right.
So hopefully they were able to do that. And that could be why these people have, you know, different descriptions of the craft that they saw.
Yeah, I know I've heard from people like Klaus Fond in Sweden. He just said, you know, if you see something, immediately go and write everything you can down, you know, quietly by yourself, even if you're with another witness, you know, write your own account carefully and, you know, draw the pictures, everything you can right away. And I understand that because you can, you know, quickly forget little details. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, best to do it all very quickly. Write all the details down. And you know what's interesting, now that you bring this up? I really looked into memory and false memory and everything when I was getting my degree, just mostly because I was interested in this sort of stuff. And there have been studies that have shown when you write down what happened immediately, those, you know, memories are sealed. Then, you know, you have an idea what has happened. But over time, your memory of that incident gets totally corrupted. So in other words, if, and this is what they did, they had people write down what happened. Then they had another group that didn't write down what happened. They asked these people a few months later what occurred. The people who hadn't written down what had happened were more accurate in their anecdotal telling of the story than the people who had written it down. So it's just that, I think it's just that when you write it down, then you forget it. You recorded it. You don't need to remember.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
How about that?
So the people who didn't write it down, but it just shows the problem with memory. But the example here was because police officers take their testimony statements, their statements are more reliable than when they come to court. So it's almost kind of a waste of time to have the witness come to court because their statements, their memory is going to be less reliable than their written statement when the incident occurred.
Wow, amazing.
Yeah, pretty interesting. Before I let you go, that's it for news, unless you had another one.
No, but I just wanted to say something. I don't know if this will be going out in time, but there's the super moon tonight.
And, yeah. That was actually this morning. Well, it's still going on, but I think this morning was when it was at its peak.
Oh.
But it's still here. It's still good. It's a super moon. It's not like super super, but it's still super.
Okay. All right. Day late, a dollar short, as they say.
What can you do? That's what I understood. I could be wrong, but that's what I understood. But I want to ask you a question.
All right.
Do you think that the president's So, for instance, Trump.
Uh-oh.
I know. No, this shouldn't get you in trouble, hopefully. But
Okay.
do you think presidents are briefed about UFOs? Do you think Trump was going to be briefed about UFOs or Obama was? Do you think this is something that happens?
That's a good question, and my personal thought is a need to know basis, most likely. Or if they, just like when I had Chris Mellon on my show a while back, he said if the president directly asks, they have to tell him or her, so they do have to. But if they don't ask, I think it might be a need to know situation. That's my own opinion.
And the issue is let's say Chris Mellon's a great example. What agency? I think he worked for Defense, DIA.
Yes.
And Chris kind of said that even though he has an interest in UFOs, that if the president asked on this particular question, they wouldn't have anything to tell him.
Yeah, he kind of went in that direction. I'm not sure if you listened to that. He sort of, he tried to find out things, but he said that everything is, compartmentalized and, there, even though he had the very, top clearance, that he couldn't, get direct information. But he said, but if the president really wanted to, they would be able to get the answer, whether the answer was they knew something or not.
Thank you. And I'm really glad you brought that up because I kind of wanted to bring that up in our discussion, but we just had so much to talk about. But yeah, I just asked you because that's a lot of what we'll be talking about in this interview with Grant. So thank you very much for your opinion,
You're very
your
welcome.
insights.
Anytime. Everyone is welcome to my opinion. Yeah.
Not always.
Yeah, that's true.
I think
We found out on my show, didn't we?
if I ask you other questions about Trump, you might be less reticent or more reticent to share your opinion,
That's
which is
that is correct.
probably wise in today's
Yeah.
world. But thank you so much for coming on
You're
the
very
show and
welcome.
sharing news again.
All right, excellent.
Will you have a safe Monday and we'll talk to you in a couple days.
Yeah, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
All right, let's talk to Grant. I am excited to have back on the show Grant Cameron, and you're in exciting Laughlin, Nevada right now, huh? Or is that.
Yeah, one of my favorite places. I love Laughlin here.
Oh,
It's,
you. Yeah? It's an interesting place, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I like it because especially for us Canadians, it's a nice warm place to come in the winter, and
Yeah.
it has some nice scenery. But it's actually back in Winnipeg, it's almost as warm as it is here. It's kind of weird because
So,
I'm in the coldest major city in the world, so it's
really?
kind of
Oh my
unusual for it to be
gosh.
summer. Yeah.
So you try to get away from there as much as possible.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So, calling you, maybe some people are thinking, why do we call a Canadian to talk about American politicians and UFOs? But of course, many people know, especially my listeners, that you are an expert on presidents and UFOs. And so, what's interesting is when we set this up, I had different ideas of what we might be talking about, or at least how it would be framed, because Monday, I think, when we decided to do this, the outlook was much different for who might be headed to the White House.
Yes, yeah, it was quite a shocker, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's for sure. So, I guess my first question is, I'm not aware of Trump ever talking about UFOs, are you?
There is a video on the internet where he's in a sort of a line assigning hats and stuff for people, and some guy's yelling at him about this UFO disclosure, and it goes on for quite a while. 30 seconds, 45 seconds, and Trump totally ignores him. He doesn't even acknowledge this guy's there. So that's the only thing I know. He would have been asked by Damon Steere, who asked the initial question of Hillary Clinton in New Hampshire, Because Damon Steer asked all of the candidates as they came through the little towns trying to win New Hampshire. The thing with Trump is he doesn't really go from town to town. He's just there to make his speech. So he flies in from New York, flies back out again. So Trump was never on the ground in New Hampshire. So he was never asked the question, but all the other candidates were asked the question. So he, as far as I know, he's never answered a question on UFOs, but he did have this one incident where some guy's yelling at him to disclose.
Mm-hmm. So we have absolutely no idea what his take might be on this topic.
Yeah, exactly. Although he's big into conspiracies. The National Enquirer is his mm-hmm. main backing magazine and stuff. So, and he's talked about conspiracies a lot. So I'm sure he probably would not be averse to admitting that, yeah, the government's covering up this whole thing. And he's probably had his briefing by now. Whether they get into, because there's a lot of top secret stuff. So he's gotten in the intelligence briefing already, but whether they've gotten to the point of describing the UFO stuff, or as Dan Quayle used to describe, the most interesting stuff they tell you in the briefing is the stuff they don't write down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I had the same thoughts. He's certainly into conspiracy, so it's possible he's aware of what, you know, people think about this phenomenon. Now, I was a bit shocked, as I think many others were, especially in the media, that he didn't pick up and run with the whole, you know, Podesta and Hillary talking UFOs thing. As though he could have used that against her.
Yeah, I saw the same thing, except that I always pointed out that when John started this thing, when he asked Lena Dunham in September of 2015, nice interview, Lena, next time ask her about the aliens, nobody really asked any questions until Damon Steer in December. So they waited mm-hmm. for 3 months for someone to ask a UFO question. And I always maintain that John Podesta is sort of like the power broker for the Democrats, very smart guy. And the way the Clinton campaign worked, at least, is you put everything in front of a focus group, and whatever the people like, you talk about. Whatever they don't like, you don't talk about. And so there is no way, no matter what anybody says, there's no way John Podesta brought up the UFO issue without putting it in front of a focus group. And so he would have realized that it was much more positive than, for example, back in 2008 when Dennis Kucinich was asked the question, did you see a UFO? And from then on, every single article that was ever written about him talked about the crazy guy who'd seen the UFO. His career was over. So by Podesta bringing out the issue to Lena Dunham in late 2015, it seemed to indicate that it's not the toxic issue that it used to be with the media or with the other candidates. And it may just be that Trump's just not interested in the subject, and he doesn't really see the significance of going after her compared to bringing up emails or, you know, making up stuff about her.
Mm-hmm. I think you make an excellent point here. I agree with you 100% that Podesta would not put his candidate in jeopardy if he didn't believe that the topic was viewed positively. And what's interesting about that is that the shift in that they must have found in their numbers and their data, of course, their polls were in their data turned out to be wrong in the end, but they somehow saw in there that people viewed the UFO topic positively. And that seems to be an interesting shift, an important one.
Yeah. And the other thing is that what Podesta did with it, it really wasn't Hillary. And I always try to point out to people that Hillary never brought up the subject. Hillary mm-hmm. only answered three questions. And the way it was set up was she would say, I promised John I would do it. I'm just interested in open government. So what John did is take the heat off her, and he takes responsibility that it's his crazy idea, his crazy issue, and he wants open government, so Hillary's going to help him out. So it sort of takes the onus away from her. And so I always say to people, you got to realize the fact that this is part of what they wanted to do, is they wanted people to ask questions. And that has to do with people I've heard from behind the scenes who told me, this is a year ago already, this thing about the government wants it out, but they don't want their fingerprints on it. And I said, well, good luck on that. Like, how does that work? Mm-hmm. And when I saw that Hillary wasn't bringing up not bringing up the questions. So she doesn't bring up the questions, and she wants people to ask the question. This is how it was basically set up. And even people will say, well, she, you know, we want her to talk about the Rockefeller Initiative. She has talked about the Rockefeller Initiative. Rob Simone asked her in 2008 at a fundraiser in Los Angeles, and he said that she was very open, that she clearly stated, yes, I was part of the Rockefeller Initiative. Yes, I remember this thing. Yes, I took the material to the president and didn't deny anything. And the problem is that people aren't asking her about the UFO thing. It's not that she's, you know, it's not her. It's we're not asking enough questions, that she's very open about the thing and hasn't really evaded the subject at all. And yeah, actually, if you see what the WikiLeaks, you see this WikiLeaks email that came in November when she goes on the Jimmy Kimmel show. And so John Podesta sets up with Lena Dunham. He says, ask her about the aliens. This is September. Then it goes October. And then on the 5th of November, she goes on the Kimmel show. And this internal email leaks from WikiLeaks, which says that she's upset because she didn't get asked the UFO question. So this comes down to this thing. It's not that she can't bring it up. She's waiting for someone to ask a question. And then she's upset. She's practiced the answer for 5 minutes on this UAP thing, and she doesn't get asked the question. And one of the things that was interesting was pointed out to me was, and I got it wrong. I said that she didn't get asked the question until March of 2016 on the Kimmel show. And that's when she brings up the UAP thing, and she gets it wrong. She uses the word,
stumbled explained around it. Mm-hmm.
And yet the thing is that was what John Podesta that got it wrong. John Podesta taught her that's what the term was, unexplained. And so that's what she had actually memorized it correctly. And she gets to answer the question in 2016. And I say that's very significant because if you go back and review the when she finally gets asked the question by Kimmel, she does not hesitate. She's very confident in her answer. She's memorized the answer. So this is the answer they want out. And she gets asked what I call the $64,000 question, which was asked to Bill Clinton. Was the question, does the president know what's going on? Is the president in charge? And he asked Bill Clinton, and he said, you know, when you put your hand on the Bible, you know, the first thing I'd do is I'd run to the White House and get the answers. What did you do? And Bill says, well, you know, I got all the Roswell records, and I looked at them, and there was no crash at Roswell, and I'm embarrassed to say that I couldn't find out anything. Well, you can't have it both ways. You can't say I had the Roswell files and looked at them and then say you couldn't find anything. So Bill plays this sort of, you know, I smoked marijuana, but I didn't inhale. And he's sort of like bouncing all over the place and sort of being deceptive. And then you have Barack Obama is asked the same question. When you got to the White House, what did you do? Does the president know what's going on? Do you have control of the subject? Then he's, as Ben Hansen points out in his review, he's breathing at 42 times a minute when he's asked that question. And he basically says, I can't reveal anything. So it's interesting to note that when you see the fact that she's practiced the answer and then she finally gets asked in 2016 by Kimmel, when you watch her answer and realize that she's practiced this answer, you see that she basically is very authoritative when she says, well, you know, your husband, he says, I asked your husband about this, and he said he couldn't find out anything, so what about you? And she just smiles, and you see that, you realize she's practiced this. She smiles, she waits for the audience to quieten down, she says, well, I'm gonna do it, and then she hesitates, and everybody's laughing again. And she's very authoritative, she's not hesitating, as if this is a plan. And that's what the WikiLeaks emails seem to show, is that there was this plan, that they had set up this plan. John would set it up with trying to get someone to ask the question. Hillary would answer the questions. And you could see that this was not some random event where Hillary was trying to get some votes or she just happened to get the UFO question. This all was planned in behind the scenes. And it was John Podesta that, to me, had found some sort of way. He's always been fascinated with the subject, and he'd found some sort of way to get his disclosure thing on the agenda. And if you look at the interview he did with KLS-TV, it's very informative because when he does the initial tweet, when he leaves the Obama administration, the day before he leaves the Obama administration, he says, once again, which means he did this before. And it indicates to me that he tried to get Bill Clinton to disclose, and Bill Clinton wouldn't go along with it. He says, once again, my biggest disappointment of 2014, which is the 1 year he was in the Obama administration, is I didn't get the disclosure of the UFO thing. So then he talked to Barack Obama. He couldn't get it. But when he's on the KLS TV interview with George Knapp's station, that's when he says, I think I convinced her. As if now he's got somebody who's the puppet. That's why I called, when people started with the anti, when I put stuff on Facebook, people would start, the Hillary haters would come out and I'd say, don't watch the puppet, watch the puppet master. Hillary is just the puppet. You watch with Podesta. It's Podesta that's manipulating all this stuff in the background. And he says on KLS TV, I think I convinced her. She has to sit down, look at the material, and disclose as much as she can, which again indicates that the president does have control, that she has to sit down. She will have the material in front of her, and she decides what she can do and what she can disclose, and disclose as much as she can. And even Hillary, in one of her statements, actually states a similar thing that indicates she will have control, because she said, if I can get agreement and if it doesn't involve national security. But it's the if I can get agreement is indicating that she will have the material, and there's some sort of meeting, whether it's the Director of National Intelligence, CIA, Joint Chiefs of Staff, or it's the MJ-12, or whoever this group is. It sounds like she has to get an approval, or she gets an approval with some sort of cabinet or somebody before she releases it. So that's where she says, if I can get agreement, which would indicate that Hillary knows how the situation works behind the scenes, whether the president has control or whether the president doesn't have control.
Well, to play devil's advocate here, though, I think there's still some assumptions there in that. I agree with you 100%. I think there's a lot of great insights here that this is John Podesta's pushing this forward. And like we talked about, or you had mentioned earlier, he only probably did this because he saw positive data, that people were positive to this topic. However, when it comes to what information there may be, or that even she or he are aware of, all of those statements would still fit. So, for instance, when they put out the Roswell, the couple of Roswell reports that the Air Force has put out, that was organized, and people had to get agreements and green lights even to do that investigation, let alone to release it. And of course, they're not good reports; they're a bit silly if you really look into them. But so she could be referring just simply to whatever else may be there. She would have to get, you know, a consensus and permission to put that out, which, of course, she's very sensitive to classified information, and that being released, she's certainly been raked over the coals and may continue to be over that issue. So I guess the question remains, two things. First of all, I think you're also exactly right in the right questions haven't been asked. She's got this very rich history when it comes to, you know, their Bill and Hillary's friend Lawrence Rockefeller, who looked into the topic, funded a lot of research into the topic. They certainly discussed this issue with him. And it would be great if in a public forum those questions were asked. That would be much more interesting and more insightful into her views on the topic. But what they know, I think, is the really hard part, and if they know anything. Of course, you are of the belief, and I think you know this because you probably get a lot of feedback, because you're a bit in the minority here, that the president is briefed on everything when it comes to UFOs and ETs.
Yeah, because it's constitutional. I mean, I always use the example that when the president is inaugurated, you have two footballs, these nuclear footballs that are carried around, one for the incoming president, one for the outgoing president, because Americans are constitutionally anal about how things work in the Constitution, and they're afraid that there's going to be 30 seconds where there's not somebody there to push the nuclear button if they have to. And if you're that anal about the Constitution and about my First Amendment right to free speech, my Second Amendment right to bear arms, my Fourth Amendment against search and seizure and all this kind of stuff, and everybody's into the Constitution, it's very improbable to me that people who work their way all the way up through the the ranks of government and then suddenly realize that the president is not running the country. He's just a puppet, that everybody's just going to go along with it. It doesn't make any sense to me that that would be the situation. I say that all UFO secrets classification falls under the category of everything else, that all secrecy and all classification is not run by law. It's run by executive order. An executive order is signed by the president of the United States, is run out of the executive office of the president. So it's inconceivable that you're going to have some other agency that is able to take that and form secrets outside. Because it started with Roosevelt. He first brought up secrecy to protect weapons in World War II. He created the classification of secret and confidential. Truman added top secret. Eisenhower added national security. Bill Clinton did the thing with contractors, security for contractors. And it's all, to me, it constitutionally, it's all run under the president of the United States, all secrecy. The president doesn't have a security clearance. All the military has to report. It's inconceivable that you'd say the military it takes an oath to obey the Constitution, obey the law, and uphold the Constitution, and that suddenly they're going to be insubordinate and keep secrets from the president. Okay, I have to clarify. You mentioned this thing about the Rockefeller Initiative and that Bill and Hillary talked to Lawrence Rockefeller at the ranch. And as far as I know, that's not true.
Well, I just mean at some point. I don't necessarily mean at that moment at the ranch.
But there's a significant part there, because what happened at the ranch, according to Marie Galbraith, who ran all Rockefeller's UFO material, the president did not show up. The president was at the ranch. So was Hillary at the ranch. And the president did not show up for the briefing. And if you think that the president wants to know what's going on, that he's out of the loop, this makes no sense whatsoever, that the president would not appear at that briefing. And I say the reason the president cannot be at the briefing, why he didn't go down, why only Hillary attended Rockefeller's little song and dance at the ranch, was because the president doesn't need to know what Rockefeller, and as he told Rockefeller the next day, he said, you know, this is like the tar baby. You can't touch it, because once you touch it, you get stuck to it and you can't get away. So the president is kept out of the thing. As Ron Pandolfi from the CIA said, the president can't be a player. You can't have him going into a briefing with Lawrence Rockefeller, and he didn't go into the briefing. And Lawrence Rockefeller never got to the president. He had to deal with the science advisor because you can't go.
In the terms of it being a tar baby, I mean, politically, it is as well. I mean, especially at that point, like you mentioned with Kucinich, which was years later, it was a political hot potato. I mean, you don't want to be seen as a goofy UFO guy.
In that sense, too. But I'd say it's, for example, that's why I refer to the two documents. There's the two Hillary Clinton documents that were part of the Rockefeller Initiative. And the one document is the one I couldn't figure out for 15 years. And when you realize that the president can't be a player, you realize what's going on. All the material from Rockefeller to the science advisor, material from the science advisor to Rockefeller was going through the first lady's office. So you got to answer the question, why is it going through the first lady's office? Because the president can't be a player. The president wants to know what's going on. So Hillary's not a member of the government. She's the president's wife. And so she takes the stuff to the president and says, okay, Rockefeller's saying this, the science advisors are saying this.
And just for the audience, just to clarify, and you're the one who got these records out, all of Lawrence Rockefeller's communication on the UFO topic was coming through Hillary and her office, not to the president. And like you said, then Hillary is bringing that to Bill.
Yeah, and the president was never involved. There is there's nothing there except for one memo from the science advisor to the president just before they go to the ranch saying, I just want to let you know, and it's sort of like a warning. We tried to deal with Rockefeller. We tried to, you know, appease him, and he's going to want to talk to you about UFOs at the ranch. So the president gets the heads up that he's going to be talked to about UFOs at the ranch, but he never sits in the briefing. And the reason I say he doesn't sit in the briefing, and the reason that Hillary's moving the material to the president, is that the president can't be a player. He can't be seen to be playing.
Okay, so what about this idea then? What about another reason why the president might not know or want to know, because of plausible deniability? I mean, couldn't a president like Obama just say, you tell me you've got it handled, that's all I want to know?
Okay, but you can do that with everything. Because if you can do that with UFOs, you can do that with everything.
Oh,
but
sure, exactly.
We don't want to get the president involved with the Iraq war or with, you know, terrorism because we want him to have plausible deniability. That's sort of I mean, it's a plausibility, but I don't think it's – Truman said that the buck stops at the president's desk. And so the president – and you have policy. So if you have – they may have a thing where they only come to the president at certain times. But you need policy because all policy from the White House is determined by the president. So if you want to do the policy of what are we going to do and on the subject, you still have to go through the president. So they may not be going to him every day. He may not be like totally read in. There may be that plausible deniability. But again, whether if it breaks, if the whole thing falls apart, the president is going to get the blame for it. And if you have stories like Chase Brandon coming out, if the Chase Brandon story had gone south, where he comes out from the CIA and makes a statement, and instead of it sort of just him being allowed to go back into the shadows, if suddenly that thing had spiraled out of control, it would have gone to the president, and he would have taken the rap because he runs the CIA.
I totally, totally disagree because look at Iran-Contra, look at the Bridgegate with Chris Christie. And again, just to bring the listeners up to speed with Chase Brandon. He is a guy who worked for the CIA. Interestingly enough, he was in charge of like media and he worked with movies and a CIA advisor for Hollywood on movies and things like this. And when he left, he said that he went to the library at the CIA and he saw a box with some information in it that made him believe Roswell. But we don't know what that is. That could have been just, which some people suspect, it could have been just like the day after Roswell, the book. Or it could have been a book that he read. It was just the CIA library that every CIA personnel has access to. So we don't know what that was. But if that would have blown up bigger, it doesn't necessarily mean it would have went to the president. It could have gone just inside the CIA, unless there's proof.
No, I mean, you're making the point. So, yeah, Iran-Contra, the president took the rap. I mean, he got off the hook. I mean, they used the plausible deniability thing. But still, the president, if something goes bad in the CIA, he's going to be responsible because the CIA has only one job, and that is to provide intelligence for the president of the United States and the people at 60,000 feet as Chase Brandon. And as to the Chase Brandon story, Chase Brandon said quite clearly that the book was done, depending the same interviewer told me two times or eight times, that the CIA made him change stuff. The CIA basically wrote the book. So the CIA is basically controlling what he's putting out. And that's how you do it. You fictionalize it. So, no, he can't say that you know, I saw this particular document or this particular thing because that's classified material. So he makes up the story that he saw this box and stuff like that. The key comes down to who the guy is that's telling the story. Is we went, Billy Cox went to the archivist and said, did you find the files? Did you look for the files? And they said, a statement's been put out, and that's how they got off the thing. But if it spiraled out of control and it started to ask the questions of putting Chase Brandon under oath and saying, where did you see these files and this sort of thing, I mean, it would all spiral out of control. But everybody allowed him to walk back into the shadows, and the story faded away, and that's how they disclose stuff, is they do these little drops and these plausible deniability things, and there's a pattern behind this. This isn't happening randomly, that these people are
– But this
– Chase Brandon
– Uh-huh.
Chase Brandon didn't put out this book randomly. He's supposed to be putting out another UFO book. It was reviewed by the CIA, so the CIA stamped this thing. And I say the CIA is – the president is responsible for the CIA. And if a story gets totally out of control, they may be able to get away with plausible deniability. You can't prove the president wasn't involved in this thing, but they're still going to go after the president because he's in charge of these agencies. He can't say, well, I'm not in charge of my agency, so they can do whatever they want, and I'm just going to say I didn't know what was going on. That doesn't really work. If it really gets out of control.
Oh, but if it gets out of control, they can go to the, you know, the head of the CIA and say, what is this craziness going on here? You know, take care of it. And that's when people start getting let go until the public is finally appeased.
Yeah, you save the president. So the CIA director resigns and the president gets saved. That's how it works.
That's how information gets disclosed. But I think, you know, Robbie Graham brought this up, and I'm sure you read his story. Did you read his article recently?
Yeah. I read Robbie Graham's story, yeah.
Okay, so yeah, with Robbie Graham's story, he brings up the idea, and you know this one very well. I mean, you know about Richard Doty, you know about the Emmenager story, these stories of the military coming and telling people, oh, we're going to give you the story, and then they don't. And maybe you have a different idea. A lot of people feel that these are probably seeding disinformation as opposed to seeding real information to disclose. I guess what would be your take on that? Chase Brandon, for instance, in his book, we can't take for granted that that's real information. Well, or what do you think?
Well, the way it works is if you're an agent for the CIA and you saved the world from whatever, you say, I want to write up my story. They say, okay, fine, you can write up your story. You got to change the names. You got to change the dates. And that's how they do it. They're not deceiving. They're not putting out disinformation. They're putting out information through hiding it through disinformation. So what you do is you let Bob Lazar go on to Area 51 and you let him see the stuff because you know he's going to take it to John Lear, and John Lear is going to put all the Area 51 stuff out, and everybody's going to say, oh, it's John Lear, it's a bunch of garbage, forget about it. And the story will get out, and everybody will think, oh, it's just a story that was made up by John Lear.
But why would they want the story out? I mean, there would be a reason to have this information get out.
Well, because they don't want people back in 1947. They're doing this gradual I'm actually writing a book on this right now. It's a gradual disclosure thing. That, for example, like, why would they try to throw people off? I mean, if you want – here, I'm from Canada.
Mm-hmm.
If you want the UFO thing to shut up, if you don't want the UFO story out, you do exactly what Canada did. In 1967, you shut your mouth and you don't say anything. Canada – people have asked me in Canada, who's running it in Canada? I say, I have absolutely no idea. I don't even think Canada's even doing anything. If you don't want it out, if you want it covered up, shut up. You don't go like Bob Emmenager. You shut out Blue Book in 1969 and say, we're not involved in this. And then 3 years later, you go to Bob Emmenager and say, well, we got these documentaries we wanted you to do, 8 documentaries. And then we want you to do this UFO documentary and hide it under the other documentaries. And all you do is you throw gas back on the fire. Why would you do that? If you want it covered up, shut up and don't say anything. Mm-hmm. The idea that they're dropping this stuff doesn't agree with the fact that you're trying to cover it up, because all you're doing is starting the fire and you're controlling the fire. So what you're doing is you're getting the story out and protecting the classified material. You want people to know, for example, Bob Lazar, he goes on the base. He gets arrested for showing Lear and all these other people the tests, and they take him to Indian Springs and they debrief him and they say, when we told you it was top secret, that didn't mean to go and bring your friends to watch the test. And then what do? They suspend his security clearance because his wife is fooling around with this pilot training guy, and they don't fire him. He's released top secret material. He's taken people to show the test, and they don't fire him. They invite him back to the base again.
He allegedly.
Was never fired. Well, okay, but he was never his story.
No, you're right. Story, I mean, he didn't get in a lot of trouble, assuming if this really happened.
Well, what trouble did he get in? He didn't get in any trouble.
Exactly.
They give him a big speech. They point a gun at his head, supposedly, and they let him go because they were going to take him back on the base and tell him some more stuff. They took him on the base. The second day he's on the base, they show him 125 documents. I train people. I know you don't. You show the person where the bathroom is, where the lunchroom is. You don't give 125 documents the second day. He was set up because they knew we were going to get the material and it would all fall apart. What happened with the Area 51 story was that they didn't realize that George Knapp in March of 1989 would not have a guest, and that he would get Lear to bring Lazar on and put him in backlight, and it would go viral around the world. And then suddenly there were all these buses going up into the mountains and looking at the base, and then Bill Clinton would have to take a much more land away to stop people from going up, and it got out of control. And that's how they leaked this kind of stuff. For example, the Area 51 story starts in October of 1988, way before Lazar ever went on the base. It's in UFO Cover Up Live. If you look at the flowchart in UFO Cover Up Live, you will see the flowchart has Area 51. That's the first time it's in that documentary. Everybody says, oh, it's a terrible documentary. If you look at that documentary, they're indirectly dropping material in there, and they want the material. They want the story out that they've got it. They've dealt with a live alien, that the Roswell thing happened, that they're back engineering at Area 51.
Okay, but here's
they want to protect the classic hero.
Here's the devil's advocate to that, that it could also be used putting the information out as a distraction. Why would you put the truth out when you could distract people?
To what?
Not only that, well, distract people from exactly what Richard Doty, who was most likely the guy I think everybody can agree on that UFO Live, putting out the information. Certainly the information jives with what Richard Doty was saying, and Richard Doty says himself they were putting out lies to distract people from what they were really doing and to keep Russians off their tracks for what their secret, what their projects really were. Not only that, that it could also be used to trace back leaks to find out where this information goes so you can track where the communications lines are going and who's paying attention to this information. I mean, these are tools that you can use in counterintelligence.
But, okay, so how did it work in Area 50? Did it work out where? How's that working in Area 51? They had buses. They had to actually create a law to take more. It just went totally out of control. I mean, that's stupid. I mean, if you're putting out the story that there's UFOs over the biggest military storage thing at Kirkland Air Force Base, and you start talking about it, how does that distract anybody? All that does is direct attention. This is the whole idea. If you want the idea that you've got stuff back engineering Area 51 secret, and if you want people not to know that there's UFOs flying around Kirkland Air Force Base, you just shut up. You don't put all this stuff out and get everybody coming to the base, everybody trying to it makes no sense. The same thing as with the Russians. I mean, how stupid do we think the Russians are that they're going to fall for the MJ-12 document? This is nuts. The Russians aren't that stupid. They know what's going on. They gave satellite photographs to NAP. They know what's going on. They're way ahead of us. They're not fooling the Russians. It's like they had this with Bob Lazar. They gave him a gun and said, you need this gun because the Soviets are going to try to kidnap people. This is like total nonsense stuff. This is just.
But okay, but when it comes to Area 51.
Just shut up about it.
Well, we don't know that they didn't shut up about it. First of all, with either situation, with Richard Doty or Bob Lazar, we don't know that any of the information they were given was actually given to them from any government source, especially when it comes to Bob Lazar. We don't know for sure that he even worked at or was set foot on Area 51. John Lear was aware of these Area 51 rumors prior. They had been in the Las Vegas news since the 80s. They had been looking into Area 51. And with Richard Doty is the one anomaly where he actually was in the Air Force when he released information. But you still could argue we don't know that he was given anything officially.
Well, but you could say that with anybody about anything. I mean, George Knapp said that all the material that that Lazar gave him, he got from independent people in little bits and pieces from other people. And I know one of the main witnesses that's never been talked about that Knapp was dealing with that sort of confirmed the whole thing, that the whole thing was for real. And so, I mean, I would back to that. I mean, we can always say that everybody's making up stories and nobody's telling – that people aren't telling the truth. But the Area 51 thing I think is pretty well confirmed that something was going on there. There are a lot of people. It's not just Lazar that was talking about Area 51 and stuff going on in terms of aliens at Area 51. I mean, Knapp had 25 witnesses and he had the six that were threatened, one after another after another. And he said his phone was tapped, there's no doubt, and people were coming and they were going to go on camera. And then the very next day, Knapp said they would phone up and say, you know, I'm being followed around and I'm not going on camera. I mean, Knapp would not agree with that. And I think he's the authority on Area 51.
No, I would agree. And that's where the best credibility comes from, Knapp. But unfortunately, which is difficult, he's one journalist, the only person who has spoken to any of these people, the only one who's gone on camera is Bob Lazar. And if it wasn't for Knapp's credibility, which is in my mind is very high as well, you know, this it would be a dead story. So you're right, there's a mystery there. But let me ask you this question. What purpose would it serve the CIA to release this information? Why?
Well, you want the story out. The same as
why?
Why would you release stories, CIA stories about agents who had done certain things, who get to write up a fictional story about what they're doing? You don't want people back in 1947. It's this gradual acclimatization thing. When Kit Green was interviewed by the Mirage Men people, He talked about this thing where you build it up, you know, the aliens eating our kids and all this kind of stuff. And then when the story comes out, it's just, oh, it's just ETs. And everybody goes, well, I mean, they're not eating our kids. And well, no, they're not eating your kids. It's just ETs. And they go, well, what's the big deal? I mean, that's this acclimatization thing that people have talked about all the time, is that you can't leave people back in that you're, and I've heard it now, even after the election, I'm still hearing this thing that this is go and that they're going to drop more stuff. And we're getting little bits and pieces. Like, why would they talk to Tom DeLonge? Because it's the same thing with Tom DeLonge or Stephen Greer or Bill Moore, is you get these people with high egos who they can manage to get out some sort of message. And there you have both Greer and Tom DeLonge are saying they're talking to high-level government officials, and both of them have exactly the opposite view on ETs, but they're both carrying these messages. And it's, to me, it's this acclimatization thing where they're gradually getting people accustomed through movies, through leaks, to the fact that we aren't alone. Because if you drop this, that nobody knows anything about it, and then you suddenly, it gets out of control, I mean, you're in a lot of trouble.
Mm-hmm. So you are admitting, though, then, that at least some of what is being released is fiction, because all of these people, Richard Doty, Bob Lazar, Tom DeLonge, they all have different stories. Their stories are not the same.
Yeah, but it's information disclosed by disinformation, which is the same thing you do in a fictionalized book with the CIA, is you take the kernels of truth, the same as Tom DeLonge's first book. So it's a fictionalized book. And so the truth is in there, but good luck to try to figure out what's true and what's not true. And that's how they release the material, because you always have to protect the classified material. You got to realize that if they want disclosure, they go to the New York Times and the Washington Post with the photographs and the documents, and it's over. And if you want to shut up, you don't say anything. So they're not trying to throw people off, because they would just shut up, and they're not disclosing because they'd go to New York Times. So they're doing something in between.
Mm-hmm. Although, is just shutting up even possible? I mean,
Canadian government has done it. Tell me who inside the Canadian government is operating UFOs. I've worked there 41 years.
It could be because they're not doing anything on UFOs.
But is that conceivable, that the Canadian military doesn't know?
It's completely conceivable. I think that's completely conceivable.
Well, they were involved till 1954, till Wilbur Smith said, we've tracked a UFO over Ottawa, and they shut the program down, and that was the end of the story. But before, they were very much involved. They were very much involved with the military, with the atomic bomb, with radar.
They were providing reports to NORAD.
Yeah, the Canadians were very involved in UFO research until they had this PR nightmare in August of 1954, when they said there was a UFO, when Smith confirmed there was a UFO over Ottawa, and that he had tracked it, and they shut the program down because they couldn't handle the PR stuff that was coming. And then they said nothing was happening, and it just sort of went black. And then you have Paul Hellyer come forward, and he suddenly reveals, for the first time in 41 years, or like, let's say 30 years, that I heard anybody who was involved in the Canadian government, and he says the head of emergency management in Canada was briefed, signed all these papers, was taken to Area 51, went through the craft and stuff. And that makes total sense, because if there's a disclosure, if there's a crash, if it gets out of control.
I just don't find that credible at all. I mean, first of all, when Hellyer comes out, he says, for years, I mean, I interviewed him, I talked to him several times, he had no UFO information, none.
Exactly. I was dealing with him from the 70s. I've been dealing with Hellyer from the 70s. Mm-hmm. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so I mean, he doesn't have any. And then he says, you know, he read The Day After Roswell. He confirmed with a friend that there was something to that, which is terribly interesting. You know, there's no doubt about that. But then all of a sudden he starts to
talk to the general,
repeat other people's research.
As you do and as I do, everybody does the same thing. Yes, okay.
But
make him a liar.
It doesn't make him a liar. That's true, but it doesn't make it throws
it
into question.
It does make
him a liar. It means he was lying at one point. He lied to us when he said he didn't know anything about any of it.
He didn't know anything about UFOs. When he was in government, he didn't know anything about, because I was dealing with this. Okay, so Paul Hellyer makes a speech in 1967. And he says, this isn't the first time we've had a UFO landing base in Canada. We had one in 1954 at Suffield, Alberta. Nothing landed. Therefore, UFOs don't exist. So from the 1970s, me and a researcher in Ottawa were pressuring him as, who told you that in 1967? Where did you get this about Suffield? Because I was told by Wilbur Smith's wife that this was an actual event, that they had opened this base for a UFO to land, for Wilbur Smith to land a UFO there. So Paul Heller, yeah, he repeats a lot of other people's stories. Big deal. People are always repeating. The question comes down to, did he talk to this guy from emergency management on his deathbed? And did that guy tell him that he had been briefed? And I say, yes, Paul Heller would not lie. He may make mistakes of repeating other people's stuff and believing it. That's fine. He's gullible, but it doesn't mean that doesn't make him a liar. And yeah, that makes sense that the head of emergency management, because if something happens, if there's a disclosure, the head of emergency management or the head of FEMA in the United States is going to be the guy at the front who's going to have a plan. And whether you believe in UFOs or not, ETs are, you're going to have a plan. And the FEMA actually had the manual on how to deal with UFO crash. Not that they believed in UFOs, but you have to prepare for that kind of stuff. So the head of emergency management makes sense to me that this guy would be briefed. So, but that was the first time since the 1970s when I realized that anybody in the Canadian government was involved. People would ask me all the time and I'd say, I don't know who's involved. I mean, I assume somebody's doing something, but they just don't talk about it. If you want to cover it up, your involvement, you just don't talk about it. If it, the Americans have done the same thing, everybody would say, well, the Americans aren't involved. There's no UFOs, nothing going on, because nobody's talking about it. But because the Americans are talking about it, because they're dropping all this kind of stuff, because they keep throwing fuel on the fire, it would tend to indicate they're not trying to cover it up. They're trying to do something else.
Right. And who knows what that something else is. But, you know, and I guess when it comes to WikiLeaks, it really we've been talking about the general kind of topic, because like you and I know with this Tom DeLonge thing, it's nothing new necessarily. You know, he's talking to insiders who are giving him who knows what information. They're not being official about it. We wouldn't even know about it if it wasn't for the WikiLeaks.
But it confirms it. Yeah, it confirms that the fact that this is probably real. Is even the Area 51.
What is probably real?
Yeah, but that's confirms. I mean, we're
confirms though that what is is probably real. That
Because Weiss is involved, and because DeLonge said he was on the talking to him behind these closed doors, would tend to indicate the Area 51 story is right, and that Weiss is talking about consciousness, which is what when Jan Hartson talks to Ben Rich and
because Weiss was listed as someone who was in the meeting with Podesta and Tom DeLonge. Weiss works for Lockheed Skunk Works. But yep. Where do you see that he says he was talking to Weiss behind the scenes?
That's Tom DeLonge said that he talked to Weiss. His first meeting was with Weiss. And so I assume, because Tom DeLonge is confirming his story that these generals exist. Everybody said, well, he's just making up the story. But now the WikiLeaks is confirming that Tom DeLonge is probably telling the truth about everything he's saying. And he's saying he's talking to the head of Lockheed Skunk Works. And then you have the head of Lockheed Skunk Works in this February 2016 email where DeLonge writes back to Podesta and says, oh, Robert Weiss wants to know if there's any updates on the meeting, which indicated he was at the meeting. Mm-hmm. And John Podesta must have agreed to do something. And the meeting was on UFO disclosure. There's no doubt it was on UFO disclosure, because that's all Tom DeLonge is not talking about music or anything. And so you have this guy seems to be confirming that there are these high level people. There are these generals. And it just all the stuff is right. Probably the Roswell stuff did go to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And Area 51 is doing this kind of stuff. And it confirms the fact. But it's an uncontrolled leak, because they didn't realize this was going to come out. It would have been the same thing
before. But the WikiLeaks don't – the topic was certainly UFOs. However, after the meeting, Tom DeLonge sends the email to John Podesta saying that McCaslin, the guy who works at Wright-Patterson, is not a skeptic, alluding to that he was claiming to be a skeptic when it came to UFOs in this meeting. at least portraying in the meeting that he was a skeptic when it comes to UFOs, or at least that's what, you know, Tom DeLonge wrote an email after the meeting. But then he said, you know, but this guy isn't, you know, he's been helping me with my project. So,
okay. So but let me ask you the question then. Why did he attend the meeting? He knew what the meeting was. He actually asked, you know, and so he knew what the meeting was. And then there's the other memo where Tom DeLonge quotes him, where McCaslin is talking about what should the government do when they put out the memo. And he talks about giving it to NASA. It's NASA's job jar. Make sure some agency handles this, because if no agency is given authority, it's all going to fall through the cracks. So McCaslin is no longer playing the skeptic. He's actually being quoted as saying how to do this before disclosure thing.
But it's not disclosure thing. We don't know that it's disclosure thing. He's advising them on how to move forward. And the reason, you know, I think about this, wow, what if it was me? What if I was buddies with John Podesta and I could do what Tom DeLonge is? And, you know, these are the people you would want to bring together. But he's giving him advice on how to move forward, looking into the UFO topic. But not necessarily, we don't know, disclosing anything, especially if he said he was a skeptic.
No, but where does it say? Where does he say UFO investigation? It doesn't say that in the memo.
All he says is to help you with your project.
The memo.
But he doesn't say UFO disclosure either.
No, but he's saying when the White House puts it out, this is what they have to do. He's talking about policy. You've got to cross it over this STEM thing, or science and technology, and all. He's basically giving advice on how to handle the situation, and it's based upon Tom DeLonge's thing, which is UFO disclosures. Tom DeLonge is not interested in investigating UFOs. Not at all.
Well, but he's interested in getting people talking about UFOs and looking into the UFO topic, and that's what this project is a media project. It's a movie project.
I would disagree. He's strictly... His job is, I've got this media empire. You guys can't get the message out. We need this disclosed, and I'm the guy to disclose it. I would say it's all disclosure.
He's talking about speaking with Steven Spielberg, and they're talking about movies and documentaries and books. They're talking about this whole media
gradual
thing
disclosure
that they're doing.
The gradual disclosure thing. In fact, one of the people I know is meeting with Paramount today, flown to Paramount today. This is how it's done. You do it indirectly through movies, through half-true, half-false things. You gradually drop this thing. And I'm writing this up in a small book. It extends on my Hillary Clinton book. But I'm writing it up, and they've been doing this since the 50s. They did it with Disney.
Right.
They
so what good is that? Look at Close Encounters. I mean, for God's sakes, that was, you know, about when I was born. We've seen all of this stuff come out for years. It's done nothing. It hasn't revealed that there's any information out there. It hasn't given you one story.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Area 51 thing, we've got that. Almost everything we believe today. I started in 1975. When I started in 1975, it was just lights in the sky. There was three abductions. There was Betty and Barney Hill. There was the Pascagoula, and Travis Walton, when I got in, was just been abducted. That was all there was. There was no grays. There was no crashes. There was no autopsies. There was no Roswell. There was none of this stuff. This has all been leaked to us. They really created our whole impression of grays and reptilians. It all comes from leaks, from experiencers. None of that stuff we have researched. We would be back in 1975 of just looking at lights in the sky and wondering what this is. They've created a whole architecture of our belief system about, you know, what's going on and what the government's doing. And you know, the Hangar 18 at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base and the underground bases and all that stuff. And I would say that the vast majority of this stuff is going to turn out to be true, and that they are, it's all basically covered by disinformation. So everybody says it's a hoax. And that's what we do in the UFO community, is a story comes out, somebody yells hoax, everybody runs off and they go to the next story, and everybody gets taken so easy because everybody thinks that the answer is down the road, that there's going to be some story that's going to sort of answer it. And so everybody's looking for the next story. And so it's so easy to set people up. They just drop the next story. Everybody jumps on it. Somebody yells hoax. They go to the next story. everybody jumps on it, they yell hoax, and we just do this over and over again, and that's how they're getting the message out. I mean, I would say we'd be back in 1975. None of the stuff we talk about today, we talked about in 1975. None of it.
But the problem is, look at the sources of information. They're all over the board. They're not just the government. Now, granted, I mean, the Doty stuff sets the basis, a huge basis for a lot of the mythology that we all believe today, or what you use as the core story. But but the information he's put out has been huge. And then you build on that with Bob Lazar.
Richard Doty had a couple of documents, Aquarius document, and some people, I don't link him with the MJ-12, but some people link him with the MJ-12. You got to realize, in the 1990s...
He's totally linked with MJ-12. He was the first one to use the term.
Okay, this is how they get it out. I mean, John Alexander's confirmed MJ-12, and I now identify who told
him
about this.
He has not, first of all, he hasn't confirmed it, but he's also said MJ-12 had nothing to do with UFOs. So that's not confirming an MJ-12 UFO organization.
Because I identify who told him that. And the guy that told him that is into continuity of government. So he says, I think it's continuity of government, because the guy that told him about that was in his continuity of government guy. And so that's his assessment of what it is. But he confirmed that it actually exists, that this thing exists.
And here's the other hard part. This is clear. Hearsay from a third party. I heard from someone who told me something.
It's all hearsay. It's all hearsay. You know, I mean, unless.
But it's not all hearsay. That's the thing, is that's where I think we can build upon something. Instead of, like you're saying, moving from the next story to the next story, the next hearsay, going back and reviewing all of this stuff and taking what we do know, what is solid and credible, then you can start to build a story.
Okay, but what are you saying is credible? That's not hearsay. It's all hearsay.
There's a lot more that's credible. There's what organizations have officially met on what, and you can find that stuff and put that stuff together. Because what you're talking about with all of these different stories out there, then you have these stories that there's reptilians eating people and taking over the government. You've got these stories of, you know, abduction for different reasons. They're from Orion. No, they're from Arcturus. You have these stories, you know, of no, they're angelic and they're helping us. Greer, if you try to tell Greer there's any sort of negative aspect to an extraterrestrial, he's going to call you lots of four-letter words. I've seen him do it many times.
That's what they want, Alejandro. They want it to be a mixture so you can't figure out what's true and what's false. That's how they do it. Because if you want it out, you go to the New York Times. If you don't want it up, you shut up and don't talk about it and don't put stories out. All you're doing is creating situations where you have to cover your tracks and have to – and it doesn't – the Russian thing is crazy. And I have to go back to the Doty thing, because that's important. Richard Doty had a couple – he was only involved for a couple of years. The vast majority of MJ-12 documents came to Bob and Ryan Wood, and there's like 4,000 or 5,000 pages of documents. This is massive. This is not Richard Doty. This is an agency that's putting this stuff out. This is very, very – lot of money. A lot of stuff is being put into this thing. And for what? Because they want to throw off the Russians to make the Russians think that you know, MJ-12 existed. I mean, that's nuts. I mean, this is a very complex – start looking at it. It's a very complex thing. There's a lot of money and agencies involved in this, because it's a big story, and the vast majority of money that's spent in programs is on security, and that's what it's about, is protecting these classified projects. And the fact that Tom DeLonge is running around, and now with the WikiLeaks emails, is confirming that he is talking to these high-level people. The question is, why are high-level people in the U.S. government talking to Tom DeLonge? Something's going on here, and it's not to throw off the Russians.
That is a really interesting question. I think it is a great question, and I think a lot of people have blown out this whole Tom DeLonge thing, and people, oh, he's just a media figure, you know, he's just a rock star, he doesn't know anything. So there's a lot of different theories about why Tom DeLonge is talking to people, but I think you're right in that the fact that he's speaking with a couple generals, with a guy in charge of Lockheed Skunk Works, it could be that they're starstruck, but what are they telling him? Because according to him, they're telling him that they've recovered an alien, they're back engineering UFOs. It's really confusing, but it is important that they're talking to him.
That's the critical thing. I don't really care what DeLong thinks. I just agree with his view of what aliens are about. He may be a crazy guy. The key question is, and it would all have been hearsay. If these WikiLeaks had not confirmed the general's names, everybody would have said, it's just hearsay. He's just making it up. Mm-hmm. He didn't really talk to these people. This confirms that he's actually talking to these people. And the critical question is, why are high-level people talking to Tom DeLong? And Tom DeLong is interested in UFO disclosure. That's the question that has to be answered, I think.
And that exactly, and that's the hard part. And the reason, Grant, that it's fun to talk to you, and I really want to tackle this aggressively, is that because there is so much hearsay, it's hard to uncover what the heck is really going on and for what reasons. I mean, like you said, maybe it's not to fool the Russians, maybe it's to fool, well, it's just so difficult to know the motivations behind why what they're doing. Because even to argue, okay, they've had this operation going on forever, these guys creating these documents, blah, 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 putting this information in the movie. Well, it's been decades now. For what purpose? What's holding them up?
Well, because it's a big process. I mean, it's probably going to go on for many years to come.
Well, where can they go now? I mean, they've already got out. All these aliens are all over the place. You know, where can they go now?
Well, but they're watching the poll numbers. So the poll numbers keep going up. How many people are believing it now? How many people are believing it? Let's put some more stuff out. And they get to a certain point where they figure, okay, now it's safe to release it. That's the Kit Green analysis, where you keep dropping it until you think people are ready. And because you're trying to figure out how do you get this thing out without spilling the milk. Because I wrote the article called the Reasons They Decided Not to Tell You the Truth. And if the president stands up and makes an announcement, a lot of stuff's going to go very wrong. I mean, and government doesn't want to be in a position where they can't control what's happening. So they're doing this delay thing where they're, you know, let's put some stuff out. Let's get this out there. And it could go on indefinitely.
A couple of big questions.
Yeah.
So you feel that at some point Trump is going to get a briefing. Here's what's going on with UFOs and aliens.
He'll be told, yes.
So that's a little bit of a if that's really going to happen. Whoa. I mean, because he is certainly a wild card in that he doesn't have a history of politics or having any loyalty to – he's already had slip-ups where he has spoken about his briefings, which is taboo.
Okay, but he didn't talk about what was in the briefing. He just said right. He disagreed with the briefers. He's got the briefing already. He got the briefing the morning after he won. He got one of the first intelligence briefings. He's probably gotten a couple intelligence briefings. Now he's getting the daily briefing, the presidential daily briefing. So he's got access. He hasn't revealed anything that I've heard, any top secret stuff since he started to hear these secrets. He's a wild card, but again, he's got a once you're the president, then it's your cover up and it's your neck that's on the line if it leaks. Mm-hmm. So, we'll see what happens. I asked the people that I know, and I'd say there's about 30 people involved with the Tom DeLong thing, and I would know probably 15 of them. I would say the one that I say that I would trust my life with, and he may be getting messed around with. But he's telling me January, and he said it's not full disclosure, but something big is going to happen. There's big money. Keep watching it. I'm assuring you this. And so when Trump won, I couldn't believe it. When Trump won, I said, has anything changed? He said, no, nothing has changed. And Tom DeLong's saying the same thing. Nothing has changed. It's like there's a green light and something, a lot of rumors going that something is going to happen in January. So let's see what happens.
So what do you think Trump is being told?
Well, he's being told everything about everything. I mean, there's...
But what is everything about everything? I mean, the story. There are so many stories. They're bad. They're good. They're eating us. They're helping us. even I know you talk a lot, and your talk out there is going to be about consciousness and music and musicians. That would be scary to a lot of people. That to a lot of people would be translated as brain control. Okay, do you think that's what he's being told?
Well, I think Podesta knows in terms of – and he can't talk about it because it's classified.
How would he know?
Well, because he's interested in the subject. He's you see some of these letters. He got the letter from this Bob Fish, the guy who wrote the letter on the recovery of the Apollo 11 capsule. And he's telling him all the stuff that he heard in this top secret room and stuff like that. So Podesta is a high-level guy. He's chief of staff to Bill Clinton. He's the chief advisor to Barack Obama. He talked to Barack Obama. He confirmed that, talked to him about UFOs. So he would get little bits and pieces of what's going on. He may even have been briefed. But when he talks about it, he says, I think the people can handle the truth, which would indicate to me it's not going to be the aliens are here to eat us. It's going to be some almost like the core story that Hal put off, Kit Green and Jacques Vallée came up with. ETs are visiting. There was a recovery, and we've done a little bit of back engineering. End of story. The core story, just the basic thing. So Trump.
Do you think that could be the case? I mean, that we've recovered maybe a craft, maybe a couple. Otherwise,
yeah, that's what I think the case is.
So the story is then we recovered something, a craft or two. Otherwise, we see them flying around, but they're not bothering us. But we can't catch them or do anything about it. And that's about all.
Yeah, well, I think to go with the core story, ETs are here. We had a crash. We're doing a little bit of back engineering. That's where it all changes. That's where you spill the milk and you can't put it back in the jar. Because then the question is going to come up, well, Mr. President, your Constitution is responsible for protecting the American people. It's been estimated that tens of millions of people have been abducted by these evil aliens. What are you doing? The cattle mutilation question he's going to get. And they're eating us on the backside of the moon. And that's the kind of stuff that I think it delays the disclosure, is they don't want to have to go through the president have to answer all these questions, because once it changes, then it's not just they're going to talk to you and I. They're going to talk to all the crazies too, and all the theories are going to come out, all the crazy theories that people have about what's going on, and they're going to have to answer all these no, that's not true, no, that's not true, and they don't want to put in that position. So they're going to try to go with the core story, but I don't think it's going to go very well once they get to the point where they actually confirm. And they don't have to have a big disclosure. All they have to do is what Hillary Clinton said. Hillary Clinton almost made a disclosure. She said, they may already be here. That's almost disclosure. Because that's everybody can talk about, yeah, there's life in outer space. There might be microbes on Mars and stuff. It's a different thing to say they are here. That's the big thing where science says they can't get here. Yeah. As I said, everything can change. Once they say ETs are here, everything changes. Everything, anything could happen. I would believe anything will happen in terms of how the people react, how the questions. But I've heard both from the DeLong camp and from the people I'm talking to is that what is happening now is not something that they're experimenting with. Both the people I'm talking or the people I'm talking to are all saying they have a plan, as if they know exactly what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. And that's different. And I've never been a disclosure guy. Never been a disclosure guy.
But you are now.
And I'm hearing this. The person I'm talking to, and I know who I think I know who the top official is. Tom DeLong talks about he's put in contact with this guy in Washington, D.C. I think I know who the guy is. He's running the whole operation. They call him the big man. He's a guy you've never heard of before. And I think that there is something going on here. But again, when it comes to the actual announcement, I think, as I wrote the 64 problems that arise, there's a lot of things that could go wrong once they actually admit that this thing's for real.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I know you've got to run. You've got a lecture to put on in just an hour or so here. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. And it's been a lot of fun, super interesting stuff. And I'm sure it gives a lot of people some stuff to think about.
Yeah, it'll open up some avenues for people to talk. I appreciate your interest, and thanks. Let's do it again down the road sometime.
All right. Well, that was fun, huh? Well, I had fun. I hope Grant had fun. I'm sure he did. He loves talking about this stuff, and he's a lot of fun to talk to. So thank you so much to Grant for being on the show. Of course, you can see more about him and more of his work at his website, presidentialufo.com. You can also see him, You know, he's doing a lot of interviews and stuff lately because he's just out there. And he's got, like you said, these books coming out and stuff like this. You can follow him on Facebook as well. He puts out a lot of what he's doing on his Facebook book. So Grant Cameron, check him out. So thank you so much to Grant. Also, thank you to Martin Willis for joining us again for the news at the beginning of the show. Of course, he does podcast UFO, so you could go check that out when you have a chance. I also want to give you some updates. So we did have another UFO report that we posted on Friday. You could go to our YouTube and look at that, where you can see some of the videos and photos that have been released lately on our website. But you can get me, you can see me talking about them and take a look at those on our Open Mind UFO report that we post now sporadically every few weeks, just because we want to mix it up. You know, people like the different types of videos that we put out. So we put out a video every week for free on our YouTube channel. So go check that out. They're usually pretty short, but interesting. And of course, since they're video, we try to have them focused around visuals, so pictures and or videos. So check it out. Otherwise, we also have, of course, new stories, all those stories that Martin and I talked about at the beginning of the show. You can find at openminds.tv. And the UFO Congress is going hot and heavy. I'm super busy with that because we're finishing everything up as far as who the speakers are and everything. So you can go to ufocongress.com for that. We've got lots of people registering. We would love for you to register as well. So go to the website to get the super early tickets, or no, the early bird tickets is what they're called, I should say. The early bird tickets, if you go to UFOCongress.com, and we're updating more and more information about that on a regular basis. And we're going to be releasing more information, so something special we're going to do for the Phoenix Lights. Actually, that will be the theme since it's the 20th anniversary, so we've got lots of cool stuff planned around that. And we'll have people talking about that in panels and things like that. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Also, UFO Video Portal. Don't forget, if you didn't make it to past UFO Congresses, you can go subscribe to our UFO Video Portal at openminds.tv, and you'll have access to tons and tons of the lectures there for a very, very low price. It's super cheap. So check that out, and that's like one of the few things we charge for. So actually, it's a huge help for us if you would go check those out, because we do need money since we don't charge for anything, and we try not to. We still get harassed. Of course, you know, there's always those negative people out there who are upset that everything we do is not free. But come on, guys. We got to make a living here. We got to feed ourselves, and you can spend five friggin' dollars to help out, you know, instead of just sitting on your couch complaining and being mean to people and trolling online. And I don't mean you, my listeners. I mean those evil troller people out there. You know who they are. So those sons of... But you, our listeners, are absolutely wonderful, fabulous people. You're the best of the best. So thank you all so much for listening. I hope you really enjoyed today's show. Come back for more. So we've got plans for having more exciting stuff. In fact, next week we should have on the show Ryan Sprague. And if you're not aware of who he is, I've had him on before, I think. Now that I scratch my head, have I? But super cool dude. And he's going to be speaking at the conference, and we're really excited because this is going to be the first time he's ever done a lecture at a conference, which is weird because everybody loves this guy, and you'll see why when we talk to him next week. So be sure to join us there. Again, thank you all so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Adios, muchachos.